It's been called the Santa Ana, Scirocco, Chinook, and it beholds to no season, coming unbidden at high noon in summer or in the darkness of a winter's eve. The weather vane trembles, pivots, and then points dead opposite. Winter turns to summer, and summer becomes just a step away from hell's back door. The white-capped ocean suddenly stills, waiting, as an oppressive blanket of air moves downslope and spreads over the city at the mouth of the river. The cooling fog flees seaward, fading like a ghost. Now the heat holds a small section of coastline in a firm grip. Heat and something else. The Chetco effect. Tonight's story, Alone with Eleanor, enters our town on two wheels, carrying a passenger whose only baggage is pain, terror, and very soon, despair. With blank windows and empty doorways, Brookings is a town deserted, save for this one solitary traveler. One man against all the emptiness. One man completely alone. Or is he? From experience, Wade had known the Carpenterville Highway would be a challenge. He just hadn't counted on the heat this time. 2 miles south from Pistol River, and it felt like he'd opened the door into a sauna. Add to that a rise from sea level to 1,600 feet, and by the time he reached Cape Farrell Road, he felt like a wet dish rag. Fortunately, from that point down back to the highway, it was mostly downhill, and he had really gotten moving, hardly even spinning the gears and taking the corners more like a motorcycle than a bicycle. By the time he glided past the sawmill just outside of Brookings proper, he'd regained some of his energy. It was still hot, but now a bit more bearable because of the breeze coming off the ocean. He took a deep breath and relaxed. Harris Beach Campground was within a mile. He'd check in, do a quick camp setup, and then take a cooling plunge in the ocean. It might feel hotter than Hades right now, but this was the Oregon Ocean, and about as warm as a glass of ice water. As exhausted as he was, it had been worthwhile. As far as he was concerned, the southern Oregon coast was one of the best-kept secrets of the state. Rugged coastline with mountains that leaped up from the edge of the ocean. Views that few other places on the entire length of the Pacific coastline could rival. And none better than his afternoon ride had afforded him today. He pulled up to the stop sign at the highway and dismounted to take a long drink from the water bottle. It was warm, but he gulped it down anyway. Across the highway, there was a new bike path leading directly into the campground and down away from the highway. He remounted the bike and waited for a break in the traffic. There was apparently some construction further north on the main highway, and because of that, the traffic tended to come in long lines. He waited for it to pass, saw a sweet spot, and began to move across the road toward the bike path entrance. He sensed, rather than saw, the movement to his right. The sound of a car engine, and then tires crunching across the gravel onto the shoulder. Someone pulling off the highway and not seeing him in the afternoon shadows of the brush-covered hill behind the guardrail. Adrenaline pumped through his system, and he stomped down hard on the pedals. It was going to be close, he thought, but I'll make it. I'll make it. Almost there, with a sense of relief that he would in fact make it, and without warning, he had no traction. Oil, he realized. I hit a patch of oil. His rear wheel spun like an exercise bike, and just that quickly started to go out from underneath him. The rapid flow of time suddenly became a river of molasses. He tried to catch himself with one leg, but only managed to pull he and the bike hard into the guardrail. There was a flash, maybe in his head, perhaps from some piece of chrome on the car still coming at him. And then his head bashed hard against the guardrail. Unconscious now, his momentum carried he and the bike like a choreographed cartwheel over the railing, slamming him down hard onto the bike path. Eleanor, Wade thought. Eleanor? Why had that name popped into his head? He didn't know anyone with that name. Perhaps it was someone from his childhood. Maybe a friend of his mother's. He wasn't sure, but it did have a familiar ring. More than that, as if he really should know someone with that name. As if it were something important he should remember. But try as he might, he couldn't recall anyone named Eleanor. And why the hell, he said aloud, is that even important? He sat up gingerly and then groaned. There was a sharp pain in his left calf, and his head was thudding with what had to be the mother of all headaches. He could hear the pounding of his own blood against the silence. And then, with a shock, he realized that it was dark. Damn dark, to the point that he couldn't even see his hands in front of him. Abruptly, he became aware that he was sitting on a very hard and uncomfortable surface. Where the hell was he? He sat there in the dark, trying to unravel why he was sitting there in the dark. Slowly, very slowly, it came back to him. The ride across the highway, the sound of a car's approach, and then sudden terror when he felt himself going over, and his desperate attempt to save himself. Then darkness. But that wasn't right. It had been light when he'd gone over the guardrail. It shouldn't be dark. And he had no sense of a passage of time. It was downright weird. Even after a sound sleep, he always felt like time had passed. For him, it felt like the events had just happened. The pain in his left calf was insistent, pulsing to the same beat as the blood that pounded through his skull, like a distant rock band playing a set in hell. He reached down to touch his calf, and then gasped at the sudden pain. There was something crusted on his leg, and he was pretty sure it was his own blood. Forcing himself, he ran his fingers along what had to be a good 4-inch gash. It occurred to him that he had been lying here on the bike path for much longer than it felt like. Why hadn't someone stopped? Hit and run, his mind supplied for him, though the pounding in his head made even that answer too hard to concentrate on. He peered into the darkness, but he might as well have had eyes closed for all the good it did. In spite of the pounding of his head, he began to think clearly and reached down to push the illumination button on his watch. Nothing. It must have been damaged in the crash. Feeling around, he located his bike and in a minute had pulled a small flashlight out of one of the panniers. One look at his watch and he knew it was a goner. Faceplate cracked and the time stuck on 4:07 in the afternoon. Wait a minute. That's not right. Digital watches just went out when they broke, didn't they? They never stuck on a certain time. He resisted the urge to shake his head and grabbed the guardrail and slowly stood, carefully putting weight on his injured leg, until he was satisfied that it was just a bad cut. Nothing broken as far as he could tell. Though his stomach did a flip-flop, and for a brief moment he felt woozy. After a moment it passed and he began to take stock of his situation. He shone the light down at his bike and felt like throwing a temper tantrum. Everything would have been fine, save for the rear wheel, the one that had slipped in the oil. It was a complete loss. The rim had a huge dent, and there was no way he would be able to true it up. He might roll it the rest of the way into the campground, but he'd be walking until that wheel was replaced. He bent down and pulled the bike upright. As he did so, his flashlight shone on something white, and he realized with a start that it was his helmet. But no, not actually his helmet, more like half of his helmet. For the first time, he reached up and felt a large goose egg at his hairline, caked in dried blood like his calf. He looked down at the remains of his helmet, the only thing that had saved him from a serious brain injury, and he realized that in spite of his injuries, he was very lucky to be alive. "Thank you," he whispered, and following the beam of his flashlight, slowly made his way down the bike path, limping slowly into the campground. And all the time, like a song stuck in his head, that name. Over and over, Eleanor. The campground was quiet, unnaturally so. There was no one at the check-in booth this late, but having camped here before, he knew the way to the hiker-biker camping area. He'd pay in the morning, whenever that was. He was still a little fuzzy about what time it really was. He'd have to get a new watch, as well as a new tire rim. His head was still throbbing to the same beat as his calf. He took some ointment out of his meager first aid kit and smeared it over the wound on his leg. He sucked his breath in with a hiss and for a moment felt lightheaded. He looked at the wound with the flashlight. There was still some blood oozing, and he gingerly wrapped it with some gauze from the kit. He was too tired to do anything about the wound on his head other than to take a couple of aspirins with a sip of his warm water. He hesitated, shook out two more aspirins, and took them as well. Setting his flashlight on the ground, he quickly put up his small, one-person tent. A wave of exhaustion overtook him, making him lightheaded again, and just for added fun, a bit of nausea. He paused, taking a few deep breaths, and the queasiness passed. The demanding ride, in and of itself, had sapped his energy. Add the injuries, and it was just about to the breaking point. For all he knew, he had a concussion. He probably should eat something, but he didn't have the energy. "I'll do it in the morning," he mumbled, and crawled inside the tent. Groaning, and being very careful of his injured leg, he eased into a sleeping bag. The pounding in his head began to ease a bit, and he quickly relaxed. His breathing and heart rate slowed. He had only a moment, just as he was drifting off to sleep, to suddenly wonder why he had been lying on the bike path for what must have been hours, and no one had stopped to help. He struggled to hang on to that thought, but his exhaustion was too much, and he plunged down a dark well into unconsciousness. An hour later, a gentle shushing sound made itself known between the roar of the breakers. A soft, indefinable sound, intermittent yet repetitive. After maybe an hour, it stopped, and the only sound was that of the waves, a gentle nighttime breeze soughing through the firs, and the sound of Wade's respiration. The headache was gone the next morning, at least mostly. The knot on his forehead was painful to the touch, but bearable. That was about all he could say was an improvement. He ached. There was no other way around it. His calf was slightly swollen, and unwrapping the gauze around it had been a less than enjoyable experience. Stuck to the wound, he had gritted his teeth and given it a good yank. A small yelp escaped him when he did so, and he found himself panting from it for a minute or so afterwards, sweat beating on his forehead. But the wound itself seemed okay. He would have a scar from it, there was no doubt, but at least he didn't seem to have severed anything vital, and while it hurt, he believed he could make the walk into town okay. Unless, of course, he could hitch a ride. He'd see. He slathered the wound liberally with the last of his ointment and rewrapped it. It was sweltering in the tent. He hadn't realized when he was setting it up that it would be in the full morning sun. Sweating, he pulled on his biking gear and exited the tent. He still had no idea what the time was, though it felt as though he had slept late into the morning. He stood outside the tent, stretching out some of the kinks and enjoying the very slight breeze that was making a small attempt to cool him. Another hot one, he thought, and frowned as he looked around. He realized with a start that he was the only one in the hiker-biker campground. Then it occurred to him that anyone else who had been there must have gotten up earlier and already departed, getting out on the road before the heat became too oppressive. Odd that it hadn't wakened him. He was normally a light sleeper. He shrugged, probably his exhaustion. He squatted down and gave his bike another once-over. He grimaced. The rim was definitely ruined. Not that he had expected his daylight inspection to reveal otherwise. On the side of the rim was a long black smear of the oil that had caused it to lose traction. Then he looked closer and saw that it was something else other than oil. He ran a hand across it, still expecting to feel an oily residue, but instead came away with a clean hand. Whatever it was, it had dried like paint on the rim. He shrugged, not important. Wade stood back up to go and pay for his camping spot, and then stopped suddenly and began to look around. And not just look, but listen. It was quiet. Only the breeze and the sound of the surf came to his ears. There was no movement to be seen from any of the other tents or RVs, and no sound of people going about their vacation here in the campground. No sounds of breakfast being served. No kids running and screaming. No sound at all save the natural ones. He strained and could detect no sound of traffic coming from the highway adjacent to the campground. He swallowed hard and then remembered his thought just before falling into sleep. Why hadn't someone seen him lying on the bike path? He whipped his head around, looking here and there. There was no movement, not even the breeze anymore. The tall firs stood silent sentinels to the one lone human standing beneath him. And once again, the name Eleanor ran through his mind, as well as a shiver down his spine. Wade stood at the highway by the campground entrance. Sweat and grime covered him, though there were tracks where his tears had flowed down his face. He was numb, and that was good. Better, actually, because for the past hour, terror had been his constant companion. There was no one in the campground. To all intents, it was a ghost town. There were the RVs and tents, the host trailer, all of them just waiting for another sunny day on the coast, and not a single person in any of them. No one walking through the firs, no one at the restrooms, no one down at the beach. He had checked that last, wincing with each downhill step from the pain in his calf, walking the length of the beach, looking for even one car in the parking area, and coming up empty. He had stood looking out over the beach, hearing only the waves and the hard pounding of his own heart, realizing that the beach was pristine. No footprints in the sand, except for his own, and those were slowly being erased by the incoming tide. That was when the terror had taken hold. Ignoring the pain in his calf, he had run back up the road to the campground, yelling, spittle flying from his mouth in terror, and each gasping breath tearing a raw wound in his throat. Headache now, back with a vengeance. "Where are you?" he had yelled, over and over until he collapsed onto the ground in front of his tent, chest heaving and his heart feeling as if it might explode, darkness pulling in at the edge of his vision. And then numb, his mind shutting down. After that, nothing but intermittent memories. Events revealed as if in staccato flashes of lightning. Not even remembering packing in a frenzy. Crying like a child as he strapped everything back onto the bike and then pushing it out to the highway. The rear wheel making a nerve-wracking screech on every turn. Standing by the highway, waiting for a car, a truck, another bicyclist, anyone. He was completely alone and on the edge of madness. And then it came to him. There must have been some kind of disaster in the night. Maybe while he had been lying unconscious on the path. Oh God, yes, it must have happened right after his bike wreck. Of course that was it. It had to be. Something had happened and the entire campground had been evacuated. And all the time he had been lying unconscious. It made so much sense, and he wanted to weep for the joy of it. That was it. That was it, and they had not known he was out by the highway. It explained everything. Why there was no one here. Why no one had seen him lying in plain sight on the path. But what kind of disaster? Not an earthquake. Not a natural disaster at all, he figured. A chemical spill, maybe, and his heart rate increased at the thought. It made sense. Probably somewhere north, otherwise they would have found him on the bike path. They must have all gone south. And if it was a spill, then the winds were likely blowing it north. Yes, it made such incredible sense. Something wrong north, so he would go south. Go into town. Maybe everyone was holed up there. At least in town there was likely to be some type of civil defense shelter. Someone who would tell him what had happened. It was okay. He was okay. Other than the pain from the wreck, he felt fine. And now that he was calming, the headache too was once again fading away. I'll find them, he said. I'll find them. And began moving south on the highway. It wasn't that far into town, but the bent wheel was a nuisance. More than that, the constant screech as the bent part of the rim hit the stays was getting on his nerves. There was some brush at the side of the road behind the guardrail. After some thought, he picked the bike up and walked back into the brush. There was an open spot, but hidden from the road, and he leaned the bike against the surrounding brush. He stood there for a moment, indecisive, and then shrugged. He looked back once at the bike, and then moved back out onto the highway shoulder. He shaded his eyes against the sun, and then began walking the rest of the way into town. Another time, he might have taken the time to enjoy the flavor that each town along the coast offered. Not today. Empty windows from each of the houses he passed glared at him. The highway, now the main street, was empty. And most strange, not a car to be seen. As if everyone had packed up in the middle of the night, rushing to leave something threatening behind. Brookings, Oregon, like the campground, was a ghost town. The Fred Meyer parking lot was empty, as was the gas station. Heat waves came off the pavement, and he hurried to the overhang at the store entrance as fast as his injured calf would allow. Much to his surprise, the automated doors opened in front of him. No one had locked up before they departed, and that had sent his pulse racing. Just another business day, until something had caused a panic. "Hello," he yelled. "Is there anyone there?" Silence greeted him, along with the cool of the air conditioning, and for the latter he was appreciative. His stomach was making angry sounds at him, and he limped over to the deli case and snagged a sandwich. He looked around, guilty as if he were shoplifting, which, he supposed, he was. He shrugged and hurriedly unwrapped it, eating the first half in about 3 swallows. There was a soft drink dispenser on the wall, and he filled a cup with ice and soda, gulping a fourth of it down and then sputtering and choking. "Slow down, Wade," he said to himself. "Just slow down and take it easy." He continued walking through the store, occasionally calling out, but he knew it was fruitless. He could feel the emptiness, the lack of people. Still, he searched the entire store, upstairs and down, as well as the employee area. Nobody. Wherever everyone was, they weren't here today. In the electronics section, all the big screen televisions were on, and showing nothing but static. He grabbed a radio from one of the aisles and plugged it in. An event of this magnitude would certainly have radio coverage. But like the televisions, he received nothing but static. After trying a third radio, he gave up. His panic of earlier in the morning was trying to return, and with some difficulty, he pushed it back down. There was some logical explanation for this. There had to be. Yet there was no indication that there had been a rush for everyone to leave. The store was neat and orderly, as if just having been stocked. It was eerie. Too eerie. And he felt his pulse rate starting to go back up. "Time to leave," he said, and didn't like the hollow sound of it, as if the walls themselves were absorbing the sound, as if they might reach out and absorb him. By the time he reached the exit, he was almost running. He stopped just outside the door, running into the heat as if it were something solid, gasping at the transition from the cool interior of the store. He had a thought and looked at the store hours printed on the outside of the doors. Whatever had happened sometime between the time of his wreck and 10 in the evening when the store normally closed. Else, he reasoned, the doors would have been locked. He stood in the shade of the door overhang and shaded his eyes against the sun's glare. He couldn't really see down the main drag from where he was standing, but there appeared to be a bank of fog thick and heavy down at the far end, maybe coming in off the river. Looking closer to where he was, he saw that there was a police station catty-corner across the street. That, he thought, would be a good place to see if he could find a clue as to what had happened. There would be something there, something to tell him why he was the sole inhabitant of this town. Old habits die hard, and he found himself waiting for the crosswalk light to change before he crossed the main drag. Deciding he was silly, he walked across, though staying in the crosswalk and looking both ways before doing so. Right about now, the sound of any sort of motor vehicle would be more than welcome. He crossed in silence without incident. The cop shop was open, just as the Fred Meyer had been. He was beginning to suspect that most everything would be. Whatever had caused the mass evacuation had to have been sudden and terrifying. It didn't do much for his nerves to dwell on that. Instead, he concentrated on his search at the police station. After 2 hours, he finally gave up. Nothing. There was absolutely nothing that indicated a hurried exit. A few reports dealing with this and that crime was about as serious as it got. Not even the radio helped, though when he had first spied it, his heart had leaped. He could radio for help. At the very least, he could find out what had happened, see if he should seek shelter, or maybe even higher ground. The radio, while fully functional, had been a bust. It seemed to be working fine, but like the electronics in Fred Meyer, all he got was static. No sound of another human voice. No indication that there was anyone nearby, or for that matter, on the planet. Starting to feel the same unease as he had in the Fred Meyer, he exited the police station and shaded his eyes once again looking south. The wall of fog was where it had been earlier, and as he looked at it, he swallowed hard and felt his heart begin to race. Solid. It was much too solid. And where normal fog might fade from different shades of white, this one was all the same bright white. In color and texture, the same throughout. He looked up at the wall of fog, his gaze rising higher and higher, because the fog didn't stop. It kept going. Going and going and going, he said, and had to quell an insane giggle as he thought about the battery advertisement and the toy bunny that was constantly beating on that drum. Not unlike the beating of his own heart. Oh God, he thought, I've gone insane. Yet he was unable to tear his gaze away from that wall of fog that continued straight up, as if it extended far above the Earth's atmosphere, as if it could reach for the moon. Eleanor, a voice whispered in his head, and he wanted to shriek. He must have stood in front of it for 15 minutes before he reached out and gently touched it, pulling his hand back quickly, as though it might reach out and jerk him from where he stood, pull him inside where he would scream a silent scream for all of eternity. I'm dead, he said, in a matter-of-fact voice. I died when I crashed, and this is my own personal hell. For some reason, that gave him comfort. It was a definition, a, if not rational response, a response, nonetheless, to a situation. He ran his hand across the surface. Up close, it had a definite texture, as if someone had taken an infinite loom and woven together huge, bleached-out ropes so tightly that no light would pass through them or escape from the other side. There was no give in it, and other than the texture of the rope, it might have been a giant wall of whitewashed concrete. It seemed to rise up from out of the pavement, running a straight line up the hillside and in the other direction, down to the beach and out into the ocean. For all he could tell, it bisected the entire planet, the only beginning point being the Earth itself. The rest was lost in infinity. He turned away from it and began walking north, not looking back. He was as empty as he had ever been, and it felt as if someone else was inhabiting his body. Someone else telling his legs to move. Someone else taking each step. Not toward, but away. As if it were possible for him to escape whatever that thing was. There was a hotel on the right, and he walked into the office, grabbed a key, and found the corresponding room. It was only afternoon, but he lay down on the bed, and in seconds his overworked mind shut down, and once again he fell into a deep sleep. Sometime in the night he awoke, his slumber startled by an odd whisper of a sound, a gentle, shushing sound, as if some giant were admonishing him to be quiet, a sound that he knew was coming from the white wall. He huddled up against the headboard, the blanket pulled tight, listening as the sound continued for at least 2 more hours, and then abruptly stopped. There was something just beyond the bike path where he had crashed, a time that seemed like a million years ago. It hadn't been there then. A difference in the air that he had at first taken to be heat waves coming off the pavement. But this was more pronounced and running in a straight line up the hillside, too much like the white expanse to the south of him for his own comfort. Wade approached it slowly, staring at it with eyes bloodshot from too little sleep. Exhaustion was going to take him pretty soon, he figured, and if not exhaustion, then insanity. None of it made any sense, and trying to wrap his mind around it, trying to find an explanation, only exhausted him the more. He stood there staring for a long time, and then came to with a start. He had drifted somewhere inside his mind, and for a moment it had been more real than the nightmare that was consuming him. A small house, he thought, not because he had seen it from the outside, but because he had been there, living there actually, as if it were his own place, a simple but bright place with vases of flowers and sunlight streaming through the windows. A place where someone named Eleanor might live. He shook his head and stared again at the blurring of the air in front of him. Almost in a trance, he began to walk forward, to walk into the distortion. And as he looked outward, as he looked at what should have been nothing more than a highway going north and south, he began to guess at the truth of where he was. He stood there, drawing in gasping breath after gasping breath, knowing that it would never be enough for the scream waiting inside him. It only happened at night, and he realized it was because she had insomnia. He stood like a sentinel by the white wall, waiting as night pulled darkness across the sky once more, waiting for the small hours of the night when the sound would come, waiting to see if the white wall would move further back, as it had last night while he cringed on the bed, waiting, waiting, until sleep took him once again. It was louder this close to the wall, and it woke him from his slumber. He sat up on the blanket he'd placed by the white wall earlier. Calm now, sure of what it was he would see, he turned on the lantern he had taken from the hardware store. The wall was still there, but it was shrinking, smaller and smaller with each sound of the brush stroke. That infinite wall of white above him gone now and filled with stars, a moon peeking up over the horizon, streetlights casting a warm glow. Main Street no longer blocked by a wall of white, going south, slowly painted into view. And he knew that if he desired, he could walk down that road, perhaps leaving footprints in the fresh paint as he made his way to the other side of the painting. But his time was limited, and so he stood beneath one of the street lamps, looking up and out of the painting, hoping that she would see him and question herself, ask herself if she really wanted to put this much of her own darkness into one painting. Praying that she would see the haunted look in his eyes, and decide that this city needed no one after all, that she could paint an empty street with as much pain as an empty man. And as it all dried around him, Wade knew that he would never move again, that he was destined to be the one lone person in this town, his gaze forever full of pain and loss that was never his own. His prison complete at last as she signed Eleanor in the lower right side of the painting that she would title Alone. The weather vane turns and a breeze cools the harbor. All is as it should be. Tonight's episode, Alone with Eleanor, was written, produced, and read by Dan Gray. Music provided by Zapsplat.com.